And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, what do you make of the reaction to the murder of the United Healthcare president in New York City the other day, and the fact that 90,000 messages were posted on various social media platforms, all of which basically said he deserved it because of the way the industry treats people?
Yeah, that meshes very well with what happened in the election. The discontent of the people who are expressing the fact that they don't mind a murder, in effect. And they, you know, politically, they don't mind a neo-fascist, because they want to destroy what has been built up to work against them, or what they perceive works against them. And it's we don't know why yet the head of United Health was murdered, but we did see the fact that as you said, people were saying he deserves this because of all the denials, which was written on one of the bullet casings.
Yeah,
that United Health does to when people seek health care. Let me kind of add something similar to that. There was an article this week about Anthem Blue Cross, or Anthem Blue Shield, which is a big health insurer in a number of states, where they decided that they weren't going to pay for anesthesiology services that ran over what they say should be the amount of time that the anesthesia should be administered. In other words, they say their green eye shade people say, well, if you're having an appendectomy, you should only be getting 45 minutes of anesthesia, and if it takes 50 minutes, we're not going to pay the extra five. If you're having heart surgery and it's supposed to take 3 hours, and they run into a complication and it takes 3.5 or 4 hours, we're only going to pay for the first 3 hours because our algorithm says that's all it's supposed to be. And there was an immediate uproar about this, and they had to back down. But of course, behind this all is the idea of profits over people, and that's what people have been seeing. They feel that they've been getting the short end of the stick. That wealth, and I contend this. This is for the last 40 or 45 years, at least since Reagan, and probably it started at the end of the Carter administration, that the wealth gap in America, I feel, is maybe our greatest underlying political problem. It's the most destabilizing problem for a democracy, in my opinion. It goes back to what Brandeis said. You know, you can either have a democracy or you can have wealth in the hands of the few, but you can't have both.
Discrepancy, the gap, the inequality is the greatest in the history of the United States at this point.
Yeah, and even during the pandemic, almost all of the gains went to the top 1% or 0.1%. Everybody else was left to scramble for what's there. And of course, politically, this this falls into the wheelhouse of those who want to, you know, want to keep people squabbling among themselves, you know, fighting over the crumbs, so to speak, instead of organizing and getting at the real problem. It's what the mine owners wanted to do, where they wanted to have the Polish immigrants against the Irish immigrants against the Italian immigrants in the mines, so that they wouldn't organize together against the real problem, which was the mine owners. It's the same thing, applied to a different set of facts.
It's exactly what Trump is doing. Exactly the MAGA program.
Yes.
The problem is not inequality. The problem is Mexican workers. The problem is not that it's profitable to close plants in America because the Chinese government allows American investors to exploit Chinese workers. The problem is the Chinese workers are sucking the jobs away from the American workers. The Chinese workers had nothing to do with it. It was the American bosses that made bigger profits by developing their product by building their products in China than they could do by building their products in America. By the way, it's the migration started in America. Clothing, for example, was made in New York City. 750,000 garment workers produced almost 100% of all the clothes worn by Americans in the first half of the 20th century. Then they discovered that that if they moved to Pennsylvania, there were no garment worker unions in Pennsylvania, and they wouldn't have to pay that much, the garment industry.
Right.
So they moved to Pennsylvania. Scranton was a recipient of that. So the union sent organizers to Scranton and other places in Pennsylvania, organized the workers in Pennsylvania. After all, the workers had a tradition of unionization here in the mines.
Yep.
So they left Pennsylvania and they went down to South Carolina.
Right.
So that wasn't good enough. They went down to Haiti. That wasn't good enough. They went down to Nicaragua and Ecuador. And then they ended up in China and in Bangladesh. So it had nothing to do with the workers in Haiti or Pennsylvania or Bangladesh or China. It had to do with the owners of factories who figured out that they could get more profit if they moved their production. But the MAGA people say, oh, no, 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 this is the fault of these drug-addicted, drug-pushing criminals who are coming here to take your jobs.
Yeah.
That's a typical fascist misdirection. Yeah. It's like a magician. Look at my right hand. Look at my right hand. Right. Meanwhile, he does it with his left hand.
It's the pickpocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the pickpocket, the misdirection on that. So we're starting to see, as the Trump cabinet is put together, what it looks like. It's a cabinet of billionaires.
Billionaires. The collective wealth of 11 members of the cabinet is $350 billion. If they're not in the cabinet yet, but, you know, they will be in the cabinet. Now, Biden's cabinet is not poor, but their collective wealth is $114 million. This is $350 billion. That's a little different.
It's a different scale.
Yeah. Now, mind you, I don't think a millionaire really can empathize with a working person.
Sure.
But a billionaire certainly doesn't even consider a working person human, subhuman, because if he was really human, he'd be a billionaire.
That's it. I mean, that was the attitude of the mine owners, who are actually owned by the bankers.
Yeah.
on that stuff, and it was the attitude of many of the people who ran the garment industry to their workers.
That's exactly right.
Those people, you know, really weren't people. They didn't deserve to have a good life.
Poverty in the view of the rich, and this was especially pronounced and stated in the 19th century. Poverty is a moral fault of the poor. If you weren't a good worker or a hard worker, if you didn't have the right traits, of course you're poor. If you have the right traits, you'll be rich, right?
Yeah, and they're always able to point to someone who overcame the poverty and became a success. But what they never do is point to the how many, many, many more people there are who failed because of that poverty, who could have contributed positively to society, but were left by the wayside and became invisible, so to speak.
You can have a wonderful idea, a fantastic idea, but if you don't have the capital to put it into motion in a capitalist society, that's just an idea. It's not ever going to be realized. You got to have access to capital. If you're a person from an oppressed minority, whatever that oppressed minority might be, it doesn't matter how smart you are. Unless somebody's going to give you the money, and you're going to have a 10-time harder chance of getting the money to develop your company, you're not going to develop your company. End of story. And all the people who talk about entrepreneurialism and how that's so wonderful, it's all nonsense. Access to capital is everything. It makes you smart. If you have access to enough capital, you can't make a mistake because you've got enough money to cover it. And if you don't have access to capital, you can't be smart because you can never show your intelligence and because you can't develop anything.
Well, and then you pile on top of that the racism that exists or gets exploited, and it's even worse. I mean, we know the history of redlining. We know the history of government loans not flowing to certain areas. And even, you know, when we had programs to try to ameliorate these problems, the propaganda machine comes out and says that, you know, you really wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the government helping you. You really didn't do it on your own. You really don't have that, whereas I did it on my own, you know, that kind of thing.
The fellow who Trump is promoting to be the new defense secretary, Hegseth, has exactly that attitude about soldiers. He points out that if you combat racism, he's written this, if you combat racism in the army, white boys won't sign up. In other words, white boys, they have the requisite talent, sure, strength, whatever. But white girls, they don't. Non-white boys or girls, they don't. What you need is white boys. And anything you do to bring in the inferior types turns off the white boys.
Well, you know, if you notice...
That's what you're looking for the army, right?
Yeah. But if you notice, when we talk about the cabinet and the billionaires, if you look at that cabinet, there may be billionaires in it, but there aren't many black people in it. There's one. HUD head. A guy named, I think, Turner. There. Nobody else. There's a couple of Hispanics, you know, Michael Rubio or what have you. But the fact is that we don't see any attempts to show that people of color can handle positions of power or expertise.
No, because Trump doesn't believe they can.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then you look at a guy like Elon Musk, who comes from South Africa.
He's an immigrant.
But also, he grew up with apartheid. And the inherent attitudes that existed around him when he grew up. I don't know if he's as bad as Woodrow Wilson on issues of race. You know, Wilson grew up in Virginia, post-Civil War Virginia, but, you might be able to point to things in the way the he's going to lay out his plans and what he's going to cut. And I'm sure whatever gets cut, and it isn't going to be as much as what they think he's going to be able to cut. I mean, this week they talked about cutting Planned Parenthood, and it was pointed out that Planned Parenthood doesn't get any government money. So, but
the facts shouldn't really get in the way.
No, that, and that's the other part of it, is the salesmanship. It's the perception. People won't care about that. They'll find out down the road, oh, Planned Parenthood isn't getting government money. It must be because we cut it. No.
Right.
They don't care.
That's right.
They don't care about it. And that's part of the coalition. And again, that's just, you know, another one of the failures.
Well, it's also, as I mentioned to you before we started the show, there was a survey taken among Americans to ask how many transsexuals are there in the United States? What percentage of the American population is transsexual? And Republicans said 30%. 30%. That's what they believe. Because otherwise, why is there such a hullabaloo? It's God knows what. What did you think it was? Less than 1%?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's about a half of 1%.
Yeah. You're picking on five people, and you think that if you beat the hell out of them, you're going to solve the problems of 98% of the people.
You know, and if you go and ask all these people that are fearful of, or saying that we're giving too much to transsexuals, ask them if they've ever met one.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't know.
How someone's transsexuality, so to speak, affects their lives. It doesn't, but that's what they're emphasizing. And of course, that's what happens when you have the other immigrant, Rupert Murdoch, controlling what people see and what they perceive, and running things on loop after loop after loop. Now, doesn't mean that there wasn't a problem at the southern border, but if that's all the people see, and everybody on there keeps talking about the criminality of these people coming into the United States, when in fact the immigrants commit less crimes than Native Americans. Or someone said the average immigrant crossing the border commits fewer crimes than Donald Trump's been convicted of.
The truth is there is no crisis at the southern border, to the extent that there's a crisis, it's caused by the Republican Party not allocating enough money to process perfectly legal, necessary legal procedures that the law says the United States is, government and court system is supposed to process. People have the right to emigrate to the United States. People have the right to refugee status in American law, not in international law, in American law. They have the right to refugee status. But if you don't appoint the judges, if you don't appoint the investigators, if you don't, and then when they get into the country, if you don't provide a way for them to live and work, then there's a problem. But you made that problem.
Well, there was the other issue is that they won't prosecute employers who abuse the system.
That's right.
That's a no-no on that.
But let's face it, almost everybody who's been here, whose family came here before 1924, in other words, in the 18th, 19th, and first quarter of the 20th century, except for the people who were sent here because they were enslaved, came here on their own volition for a better life, either because they wanted to earn more money, or they wanted to escape political persecution or religious persecution, which was a form of political persecution. Everyone. The entire country was built that way. So and when I was a kid, they used to tell us, of course, we were all the children of immigrants, the best and brightest of the whole world comes to America because the ones who have gumption to improve their lives are the ones who come here.
It was a self-selected
The self-selected
class.
Elite
right.
came here. Now, all of a sudden, it turns out that the exact same people, types, are the worst of the worst. It's a lie. And the problem is caused by Republican politicians who use immigrants as a way to hide the fact that they, the Republican politicians and the people they work for, the employers, have caused social problems in America. They're the causes of unemployment. The Mexican workers are not the causes of unemployment.
Well, now you start talking about it. It's actually the people who finance the Republican Party.
Yeah.
That gets them to do the bidding.
Yeah. That's right. The Republican Party is not the working man's party. They may want to parade themselves that way because they have the votes that way, but you don't appoint a cabinet of billionaires if you represent workers. You appoint at least a couple of union organizers. You appoint a couple of community organizers. You appoint a couple of tenant organizers. Nowhere, right? Can you imagine that happening with this group, with this gang? Yeah.
Well, the other thing that they're going to go after is the IRS, who has started to go after the higher income people. Instead of concentrating on the middle class or the working people on their income taxes, they've formed a unit to go after the millionaires and the multimillionaires, and it's been quite successful in recouping. I forget what the ratio is. I think it's like 5 to 1. Every dollar they spend on auditing these people, they get $5 back or something like that. It may be something different, but now, of course, the Elon Musks and the Vivek Ramaswamy's want to cut that out because they don't want to be looked at their taxes. They don't want to have to pay any taxes.
Right.
They're the real freeloaders in society.
Exactly.
Elon Musk makes a good chunk of his money from government and government contracts or subsidies.
Well, the government bailed out Tesla. Tesla was about to go under when Elon Musk got a government loan. He's thing he's against happening. Other companies, he got it, but you shouldn't have it. That's his own type. That's not even to workers. That's to his own type.
But that's another phenomenon that they've been able to capitalize on, or use the word capitalize, where they have, they encourage this meanness that comes out, where people say, well, like on the government loan forgiveness, I never got mine forgiven, so you shouldn't get yours forgiven. I never got mine from the government, so you shouldn't get yours from the government. Government shouldn't make your life any easier because I had a hard life, and look, I came out okay. But they don't realize, of course, that their life could have been even better if they didn't have such attitudes. And a lot of people don't make it out of that. And the reason that they never got theirs was there was somebody standing behind them saying, well, I never got mine, so you should never get yours.
Yeah, the logical conclusion of that is everybody should end up in the concentration camp because, after all, some people did end up in the concentration camp. I don't know what to say about that. But what do the Democrats do about all of this? The Democrats, who seem to think, at least the organizers of the campaign, the Harris campaign, seem to think everything they did was right, but the times were against them, as if the times were handed down by God and nothing that humans can do about it. In that case, what'd they get into the political organizing business for? I don't quite understand it, but that's their argument.
Yeah, well, the Democrats have to sort this out, but they better not spend a lot of time on it. They're going to have a vote for the new DNC chairman, and there's one guy running from Wisconsin who wants to, or at least has said things that he wants to get back more to the Howard Dean attitude of fighting everywhere and organizing everywhere and doing the bottom up. Not the top down. We'll see who wins that. Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, is in that race. He's always turned me off. I don't know. He just seems to be too much of a slick politician, looking for a job to me. But we'll see what comes out of that.
But North Carolina is very interesting in that respect, because if you remember, North Carolina installed a woman in her 20s, a young woman, to be the state party director. And she spent the last couple of years organizing it up and down the length and breadth of North Carolina, a very difficult state to organize in because of its gerrymandered situation. Right. But didn't the Democrats win all the state races except the – but they didn't win the national race, but won all the state races, right?
They won the governor. They won the lieutenant governor. They won the attorney general. They won the education chief.
That was very important.
That was very important. They lost one race. And, of course, what the Republicans then decided to do, because in North Carolina is really an example of how bad the Republicans can be, is they decided that they would hold a lame duck session. And the Republicans also lost their supermajority in the legislature, which means a Democratic governor could veto things and it couldn't be overridden. And so they decided that in this lame duck session where they still had a supermajority, what they would do was pass a series of laws that would limit the powers of all of those offices that the Democrats won, and give more power to that one office. I think it's like the equivalent of the Auditor General or something that the Republican won. They've done this before at the beginning when Roy Cooper was elected. They took away some of the gubernatorial powers of appointment and things like that. They will not accept defeat. They continue to rig things. And of course, this goes back to 2010 and the multimillionaire Art Pope, who was able to invest a couple million dollars and got control of the legislature. And, ever since then, they've been doing these things to give them, in a state that's probably close to 50-50, to give themselves the overwhelming political advantage. There were three seats that they re-gerrymandered since 2020 that were Democratic seats that became Republican, and that's going to make the difference in the House of Representatives this time. So these little things. The Democrats also won in North Carolina the one Supreme Court seat, but they're still down something like 5-2 there. So really isn't that power. We've seen how much importance, by the way, this coming year is very important in Pennsylvania, because there are three Supreme Court justices who are up for retention, and the Republicans want to get rid of them. And they that's the swing on the court. The court right now is 5-2 Democratic. These justices have been very pro-people and have really put limits on the bad stuff that the Republicans try to do when they control the legislature, and included the undoing the gerrymandering of congressional districts.
Well, we've come to the end of our discussion today, and we did not get into something I'd like to get into, which is the debate within the Democratic Party about what went wrong, if anything went wrong, and what's to be done, if anything's to be done. And I'd like to make a note that we could talk about this next week.
Sure. Two quick things. This weekend, we note, is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, and there are very few of those veterans left. I knew one when I was growing up in Old Forge. He lived around the corner from me. His daughter and I were in different grades in school, but we still see each other occasionally, and his cousins I run into, and he passed away a few years ago. And maybe most importantly is this is our son Murray's birthday.
All right, Murray.
This weekend, he'll be coming home from England in a few days, and we'll be able to celebrate that.
Okay, don't get too drunk. hopefully, we'll see in fine fettle next week.
We'll do the Marie Antoinette. We'll let them eat cake.
Let them eat cake. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.